Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 27th of November, and I'm recording at 10:13 p.m., and that is Greenwich Mean Time here in, well, slightly dampish London. Okay, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, just let's have a very quick look at what's happened here during the week. It's been a quiet week for the most part, partly because of the Thanksgiving Day holiday in the USA. And that led to Wall Street being closed yesterday and half a day trading in here today. Also, a lot of stock markets are a little bit overbought in the short term, having rallied from those mid-November reaction lows, and so they've pushed back up towards prior resistance from their early November highs and also overhead trading. I'm thinking particularly of the U.S. indices overall. So not surprising to see sort of a pause here against the background of short-term overbought conditions. Okay, today's action in the Asia-Pacific region, well, it was just about all red, with the exception of India. And that's encouraging. India, which had underperformed earlier in the month, is now staging a rally. It's regained about a quarter of those losses. The big downward move today was in China. And that this has certainly raised a few eyebrows and worried a few people. The China A shares were down 5.5%. There's a news story. The government appears to be investigating a number of the broking firms, or several of the broking firms, at least. There are articles saying they're going after some of the big fish. It's partly a crackdown on the corruption that had been rife that President Xi is trying to actually deal with. But that was a sharp downward dynamic, so it's checked that gradual recovery that we were seeing in the mainland A shares. And it also produced smaller downward dynamics in the Hang Seng indices. So we can expect further base building here. These markets in China are not expensive. The A shares were very expensive at the beginning of the year, but not any longer. And we can, but they do appear to be sort of support building overall. But it's obviously checked the rally that we did have underway, and it looks like we will see more sideways ranging and before we get a significant recovery, which hopefully starts before the beginning of the new year, but I wouldn't be betting on that. I do think China's attractive though, as a medium to longer term recovery candidate. Now, moving on to look at Europe. It's very small losses in here today, the exception being Switzerland, which is up a third of a percentage point. Declines of a quarter of a point, percentage point or less across Europe is really the main story, and partly because we have some short-term overbought conditions. Wall Street mix, the Dow down the tiniest of fractions, less than a tenth of a percent. S&P up less than a tenth of a percent, and the NASDAQ Composite Index up just under a quarter of a percent. Wall Street steady against that background of overbought short-term indicators. Now, looking elsewhere, moving on, the government bonds, U.S. Treasuries, well, they've been quiet in a range, but they've been drifting fractionally lower. Today, U.S. 10-year Treasuries, 2.22%, and slightly lower. It looks to me like a consolidation, but we'll see. Needs an upward dynamic here to confirm that it's on its way to a higher phase of what I consider to be big type three is we teach at the chart seminar, big ranging base formation, in other words, activity. The VIX index fraction lower at 15.12, so they don't seem too worried on Wall Street. Now, the bigger news of the day is that the steady dollar index, which I've certainly been talking about in every audio, saying that it's really firm, it's consolidating here below this 100 level, which was first reached in March and then tested or just touched once in April. This big consolidation pattern. Well, tonight, for only the second time this year, it closed above that 100 level at 100.08. So not a decisive break through that level, but very steady here overall. And why is it doing that? Well, of course, the U.S. economy is one of the more reassuring ones overall, and steady, showing signs of recovery, as it has been throughout the year for the most part. Also, the virtual certainty that we see a quarter of a point rate hike in the December meeting, that's certainly been discounted here. And people are also forecasting that we'll have five interest rate hikes of a quarter of a point each, presumably, before the end of 2016. That's not my view. I think that would be excessive during an election year, and I think it would also say that the Janet Yellen was under pressure to speed up the very gradual pace of rate hikes that she has said that we would be seeing. She hasn't said anything to change or that or to cause us to believe that she's changed that opinion. In other words, but we might get at least one more rate hike in the first half of the year. But the Fed's problem, as I've mentioned before, is that if it were to raise rates, and it could certainly justify doing that because the U.S. economy is recovering, but it's also recovering ahead of other nations. You've still got the QE going on in China, in their own version of it, in Japan, lots of QE going on there, in Europe as well, in the ECB. In other words, lots of QE. So if the Fed were to raise interest rates much more than we see in December and perhaps early in the new year, or in the first half of the new year, I should say, the risk is that the dollar pushes up more strongly, and the figure that gets bandied around on dollar appreciation is that a 10% rise in the U.S. dollar that can knock a point off GDP growth. That's the last thing that the Fed will want to see, because GDP growth is forecast to be somewhere in the 2.5% range for next year. So I think that will be a legitimate restraint on the Fed. And frankly, we still have low inflation. I have projected that beyond mid-2016, we can see somewhat higher inflation, because I think then the commodity, depressed commodity prices will no longer be holding down inflation, and commodity prices may actually be picking up a little bit from those low levels. Depends on a lot of things, mainly on cutbacks. Supply cutbacks. OPEC could certainly start it off in a big way, cut production. And you would see higher commodity prices, and you'd see a higher inflation data. That's something that the bond market would not like to see. Bond market investors would not like to see. Okay, just going to take off this headset here for just a second. to have a little cough and a quick drink, if you don't mind. These are the human factors. Okay. Why don't actors or opera singers ever have to do that? I'm so envious. Okay. Moving on here. Just looking at, well, that's a bit of a brief romp there through the market. So, okay, what happens with stock markets here going forward? Now, people are nervous still. How many bear market forecasts do you read? I would reckon there are plenty of them. How many big bull market forecasts do you read? Well, far, far fewer here overall. And what do those forecasts suggest? Well, number one is that a lot of reasonably high-profile investors are underinvested. Hedge fund managers would like more of a two-way market. They've had a bit of that this year, certainly. But I think the main story, which we've known all along, is that they're basically underinvested. People have described it as the most unloved bull market in history. So, David, directing a question to myself, why should it go up? Well, I would say first we're back into what on average, 80% average, favorable seasonal factors from November through April. That's one factor. The other one is the US election cycle. That generally is bullish. And then we have a lot of QE going on in the world, as I mentioned a little bit earlier. We do not have any headline inflation figures. You can find plenty of inflation if you look around for it, but not in the government, not in the statistics that governments are worrying about. They're more concerned about disinflationary and deflationary pressures. So what that means is that they're not going to whip interest rates up in a hurry. And there's nobody very much talking about interest rate hikes other than the fact that the Fed will raise them a little bit here. So that's not a bad background for equities. Europe is not quite the economic disaster story that people were talking about in 2013 and 2014. It's got plenty of problems. I'm not laughing at that. I don't enjoy that. But that is the is the case for sure. But Mario Draghi is pumping in so much money that Europe can do a little bit better in here. But what are we talking about? 1.5% growth, some countries may see. So that's not a complete disaster. China, big uncertainty here. Some of the more experienced investment people looking at China are talking about a recovery next year. I hope they're right, because I have a number of well, significant for me investment in China. It's a long-term holding, but I hope they're right, and I also hope they're right not just because of my position, but because it'd be good for the global economy. We'd all like to see the global economy picking up here somewhat, and that would be good for well, it'd just be good for global GDP growth. So it's not a bad picture here overall. It would really take something in the order of a black swan. You may say, well, people already know about the risks, Russia, loose cannon, but somewhat restrained by the countries, Putin somewhat restrained by the countries weak economy here. The whole Daesh thing, that is not a black swan, but it's certainly a problem being addressed, and I think it's quite positive that it is being addressed right now. That's sort of a euphemism for going to war against them, and quite right too. No, we don't need spreading death cults. All right, not to digress here. So I think actually that that we've had a sort of a non-event year in 2000, or in the first 11 months of it at any rate, in 2000. And 15, 2016 could easily be a little better, if I'm slightly cautious about that. And it's because we do need to see just a wee bit more growth, and no big shocks here. And that we need that GDP growth to produce corporate earnings. We don't want to see corporate earnings just as a balance sheet management exercise. In other words, share buybacks and all that. We want to see the genuine growth. We want to see a recovery in commodity prices. That's easy. That requires supply cutbacks. More on that in a moment. I think the U.S. Will probably remain in a lead position, provided it doesn't provided it doesn't have to deal with a too strong U.S. dollar, which is a risk for the new year. When I say U.S. be in a lead position, I don't necessarily mean that it'll outperform, but it's been steadier than other stock markets for the most part this year, despite having seen that long overdue, hadn't occurred for 4 years, over 4 years, 10% plus correction that I had talked about and said we would see before the end of October. Now, taking it further ahead, there are powerful drivers here, which can boost GDP growth and co particularly corporate profitability for the longer term, not in any sort of linear fashion. We always get choppy actions. We get recoveries, economic recoveries. We get setbacks. We get market shakeouts, the occasional crash. But I have often mentioned that we have factors in place that can actually create a secular bull market. And the whole history on that. You had a decent secular bear market, a bull market, beg your pardon, decent secular bull market after World War II. We had then that long leveling out period that we saw in the mid-60s into 1982, then another secular bull market, and then another long leveling out period from 1999 to 2000. we're in a position really to push up out of that. Wall Street already has. I think other markets can follow Wall Street's lead in that respect. And I think some of the leading candidates there in the Asia Pacific region, India, also Japan, those I think are very attractive on a long-term basis. And I also think that China and may give people more heart palpitations, but also has the potential to see some really good moves. And if China moves, then the so-called former little tigers will be doing a little better as well. Now, other as far as big underlying factors that would underpin a longer term period of mostly rising stock markets. That would be technology. That's the big one, and that's really what well, everything else springs from that. But we're in an accelerated rate of technological innovation, as you know. Anybody who questions that, just look back 10 or 20 years in your life and see how much technology in so many areas has progressed since then. And the that technology will help corporations as much as anything. Makes them much more efficient. The whole robotics developments. It's extremely good for corporate profits overall. So the ability to produce more cheaply, more efficiently, is something that will underpin earnings overall. And then the rising middle classes. We didn't have that at the beginning of the last secular bull market in 1982, but we have certainly seen that in the last few years, despite all the growth problems. There's that big growing middle class, helped by the more market-friendly, basically capitalist models, whether it's Kuomintang capitalism a la China or democratic capitalism, as you see in the U.S. and most of the other developed economies. So that's another big factor: rising population, increasing middle classes. These are all good for the longer term outlook, I feel. Okay, enough of that. Let's get on to government bonds. Well, just the opposite story there. They've come off 35 years of an excellent bull market in terms of falling yields, and that can't go on any further. You get just a moderate global economic recovery, and you're going to see those bond yields push higher. I don't think they're going to go any back to anything like the levels that we saw Paul Volcker fighting against. We're not going to get developed economies with 10-year government bond yields up in the 15, 16, 17%. As we saw in the late 70s, early 80s, but they can certainly move higher. If you just get them up to 4 or 5%, that's a heck of a move here. So I think there's a lot of people who I fear are sleepwalking into a bear market with their bond positions. It's very understandable. They've been reassuringly reliable. They've been very, very profitable, but bull markets certainly do not go on forever. And this one won't. We get back and just get a normalization of interest rates over the next 2, 3 years, and that will produce a moderately sized bear market. Excuse me. A bear market in government bonds, and I wouldn't want to be there. And you would see some panicky exits here as people do try to get out of large positions and find that the volume isn't quite as or the liquidity isn't quite so attractive when you get everybody wanting to sell. Okay, so I'd be extremely careful. In that area, I've said it repeatedly, but that doesn't mean it's wrong, and it hasn't happened yet. But be careful. Third, looking at these currency markets overall. Well, we come back to the dollar. The dollar we maintain is in a secular bull market. We've seen the first upward leg. There's a risk we may be starting the second upward leg. I think that would not be a great development here. In 2016, I'd much rather see further ranging overall, but the markets not going be too concerned about what I'm wanting it to actually do. Why don't I want to see that dollar move up too quickly? Well, because that will excuse me, pressure the balance sheets for multinational autonomies, corporate autonomies. All these wonderful companies from Amazon to Google to Facebook to Microsoft, Starbucks, etc. All these big multinational economies. So they would have less earnings. We would see weaker US GDP growth. The stronger dollar would pressure countries that had borrowed in US dollars when it was cheaper, so that would create problems. Whereas if we get the dollar staying right around where it is, not moving too much higher, that would be a positive development here overall. But whatever, over the next year or so, and at the moment, there's upward pressure on the dollar. I would not be betting on the dollar getting a big setback anytime soon, even with intervention. I don't think it would knock it back more than temporarily. So, secular bull market for the US dollar, based on the US economy's strong position, technology leader, low cost energy. Low cost energy is the hugely important factor that I overlooked in mentioning when I was talking about factors that can lead to a secular bull market in equities. And the US is in an enviable position there, and that is the story behind the stronger US dollar. And I'm going to take another drink of water. Embarrassing. Have all this gravelly throat stuff. Okay. Don't know why. I haven't been shouting too much. So, okay. What other currencies? What about other currencies overall? The euro will go softer. I think it'll go down back down to 2 over the next few years and maybe a little bit. Let me start that over again. The euro will go back down to parity with the US dollar. So the euro tonight is at 1.0593, so nearly 1.06. I think it'll go down to parity back at 1100. Against the US dollar. That will really be more of the dollar going up against the euro rather than the euro coming down all that much. One of the reasons why the euro won't be as weak as some people are saying or hoping is because it's a reserve currency, and that will help it to remain somewhat steadier, but it's going to ease its primary trend is to ease a little bit further, range sideways, and ease a little bit further against the US dollar. That'll cause sterling to weaken somewhat. The UK government will certainly not want to see sterling becoming uncompetitive against the European Union, because the UK does most of its trade with the European Union. So it's going to be the dollar pretty much king currency in here overall. I don't really see that outlook changing. Other countries will try to peg currencies for a while. Hong Kong has done that. I don't know how much longer that will go on for. China renminbi and the Indian rupee have held up well against the dollar this year, but they are weaker this month, and I think that will continue in 2016 and somewhat beyond. Do we have any meltdowns in currencies? Well, I think we've already had them. And those have been mainly in the commodity producing, exporting countries. And those currencies will remain very soft until we get strong recoveries in commodity prices. Now, looking elsewhere, looking at these commodity markets, you've heard me say this before, but it's a point that is always worth repeating, I feel. The big variable in terms of commodity prices has to do with supply. Now, demand does not change all that dramatically. Supply is much, much more volatile. Look at oil. Demand for oil is actually pretty steady, edging upwards, actually. Lower oil prices, people are using more of it. The supply has swamped the market. We've got 3 billion barrels of oil that are floating around here, helping to keep the prices downwards. Now, so you need some changes in policies, and the changes that eventually emerge will be production cutbacks. We need to see that in metals as well. We we have not been seeing that in metals because the primal instinct of the managers in all these cycles is to see if they can kill off the competition first, but they don't want to kill themselves off in the same effort. They can hold on a little bit longer this time, the better ones, because they've got technologies which make it easier to produce these resources. But it's a supply problem. The same thing applies to the agricultural commodities, but you can get dramatic production increases or reductions based largely on weather factors rather than demand. So demand is generally pretty steady. The supply factor is extremely volatile. It's always been that way. So we're awash, particularly in industrial commodities and also in a lot of agricultural commodities. And something has to go badly wrong to push the agricultural commodities sharply higher. Might that be global warming? Someone might be thinking, or climate change. Well, if it's a little bit of warming, and there is plenty of evidence that temperatures are warming somewhat, that actually increases the moisture. You always have some areas of pockets of drought, but more moisture, generally better for crops as long as it's not too much moisture. CO2, that also helps these crops as well. And so I wouldn't be too pessimistic about agricultural commodity production on a global basis. I also think it'll be better in California next year. The El Nino is supposed to be more favorable for California and also Texas. Okay. So wrap it all up. We've got low commodity prices. They will move up somewhat. It's a rising commodity prices will be a terrific indicator of inflation, future inflation pressures. Most people will not necessarily be looking at that, but to get sharp rises, it'll also be a sign of improving global GDP growth in addition to the cutbacks that I've also mentioned here overall. And I think we'll see that at some point in 2016. And on that note, and with this croaking voice, which needs maybe a cup of cocoa or something like that, I will say all the very best. Have a fantastic weekend wherever you are. Good night.